Hello and welcome to Found, TechCrunch's podcast that brings you the stories behind the startups from the founders that are building them. It's me, your host, Becca Skutak, and I'm joined, as always, by the fabulous
Dominic Midori Davis.
Hey Dom, how's it going?
I'm good, how are you?
I am doing well. I am excited for the show we have today.
So am I.
Today we have on Emily Poteet from Advocate, which is a service platform that helps connect people to government services.
And as always, we're doing our two truths and a lie, so listen carefully to see which one of these statements is the lie. And then after the show, we will tell you what the lie was. So listen carefully. Is the lie that government agencies are resistant to this third-party infrastructure? Two, many people have to wait 6 months or more to receive aid. Or three, Emily started this business after a family member had a firsthand experience with trying to file for aid.
Ooh, those are all the makings for a good conversation. So definitely listen carefully, dear listeners. And here is our conversation with Emily. Hey, Emily, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, doing well, hanging in there, trying to trudge through winter. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah. I think a great place to get started is, why don't you tell us a bit about Advocate?
Sure. So at Advocate, we are going to ensure that all Americans are able to access any government benefit for which they're eligible. And we're starting with Social Security insurance pay. What that means is if you've worked for a long time, paid into the system, and become too sick to work, you are actually eligible to access a public insurance product that will replace some portion of your monthly income and eventually give you access to Medicaid so that you can meet your very basic needs when you're going through a big health crisis. So Advocate is on a mission to make sure that all Americans are connected to the support that our social contract and our government is intended to provide to us.
And I'm curious sort of how that works. I know it's interesting what you say about how there are these benefits. It's hard to access them. That seems like a conversation about a lot of different government departments, even on the business side as well. I know people who do small business loans are always like, why don't startups ever look to this as a way to get funding? And it's like they can't figure out how to do it. And how did you guys decide to tackle this problem as you were building Advocate?
It was a personal story. I had a situation with my stepfather, David, who became very sick 12 years ago now. He had a sudden and very big stroke. He was not going to be able to return to his work. He was working at the Stop and Shop deli in North Smithfield, Rhode Island. And I thought, okay, I know that there's this program, Social Security, where he can get some of his needs paid for and healthcare eventually. I had a bumbling boondoggle of a year and a half attempting to qualify him for that program. And it was an individual instance that actually had generalizability. As you noted on the small business loan front, there are many, many government programs where there just lacks this front end infrastructure piece that would take the individual, all of their data and all of their needs and translate those into terms that are extensible to the federal government such that the person can get out from the government what they're entitled to, what they've already paid for, what the government is hoping to administer to them. So it was a emotional story. And when I looked into why it was that I went through that emotional journey, what I found out was that there are tens of millions of Americans across a whole bunch of different categories that are going through a similar experience to the one that I had with my family. And speaking more systematically, I decided, or a bunch of us decided, that the prescription was not another nonprofit. It was not individual law firms. It was not that the government was out to get people, but rather that there was a missing piece of infrastructure, like a bridge or a road, but technological infrastructure that would sit between the American public and its federal government. And so we set out to build it.
And so what is the process right now for someone looking to get government benefits? Like, how do you even begin to do that?
It depends on what type. Our first vertical that we're looking at is Social Security disability pay when you're too sick to work full time. Right now, people work with individual attorneys. They go online. They fill out a web form. They work with the parole officers. They work with social workers. They work with legal aid clinics to fill out paper forms. If you've ever been to the DMV or filled out a W-2, you know that there's this feeling of actually that you're exposed to the inside of an engine without there being the user experience for you to catch you. That's the same that it is for disability pay. The government just hadn't yet built the individual interface that we are setting out to build. So the way that people do it now is through the intermediaries that I mentioned, and those intermediaries have differing resources and support for them. They gather their medical records. In the case of our first vertical, they gather the vocational history, and then they shove them onto forms and wait a long time, years, for an answer.
It's so interesting. Why hasn't the government created kind of this interface yet?
They do have web applications, so you can go online, and I will have to ask them. I think I know the IRS. I mean, I have asked them a lot, and I think they do have web applications, Social Security, where you can fill things out online. The trouble is, it's kind of like if you went and filled out a web application for college and you wrote down your name, you said, hey, I think I'm good at science, and then you didn't submit any test scores and you didn't submit any letters of recommendation nor your transcript, and you said, hey, college, can I come? They'd say, well, we have to look into this. That's kind of what happens with government benefits. And so on the data aggregation piece, I believe that the history is the government thought this is a big burden for the American public. We will develop your case to determine eligibility for this one first program. We're starting with Social Security. And once we get the medical records, the vocational info, we'll let you know. Unfortunately, in practice, that has resulted in years of wait time. And so when it comes to answering your question about why an effective interface doesn't exist, I will continue to ask that question, but what I can share is it's been pretty magical and patriotic to work with the folks in the federal government this past year to collaborate on what we're building. And that has been one of the biggest, I would say, blessings of last year.
And since you mentioned it, it would be good to kind of dive in to what exactly Advocate is building. Because I know you said a bridge between people who need these benefits to sort of make it easier for them to get it. But what exactly would that process look like?
I can talk about the next year time horizon and then 10 years from now. We're taking government benefits and support services one by one. So if you were thinking about a different SaaS business, you'd think of this as our client segments. Right now, quote unquote, our client segments sound something like Social Security applicants, Veterans Affairs disability applicants, immigration candidates, things like that. So it's a weird way to use client segmentation. But each of these applicant pools or client segments has a government department that handles eligibility for services. And so what we're building is a machine or an underwriting engine that creates auto-adjudicatable cases from the start, collaboratively working with the government in order to feed them the requisite data in terms that are extensible to them. So it's a back-end engine. And eventually, we will have a self-service portal similar to a new age TurboTax. But because we need to know what wins first, we're holding back our own web form because we know that we need to control the quality of the data and ensure it's positioned appropriately because we're helping individual people whose whole lives is riding on this.
And you'd mentioned a little bit earlier about what it was like kind of working with the government orgs that are behind a lot of these different benefits in the areas you're looking into. And what has reception been like working with them? Were they excited to say, to meet with someone who's trying to maybe fix a problem that they're aware of on their own end? Is there sort of any kind of friction there of when you're working with a huge government agency as a small company getting off the ground? What has that looked like of trying to kind of work with them to find the solution?
Yeah, it has looked like, I don't know what elbow grease looks like, but that's what it has felt like and looked like. It's been me just hustling to talk with people. So I'd say that the existence of industry, like just let's take the three verticals I mentioned. There are accredited attorneys that work in Social Security disability representation. They go in front of judges eventually. They argue cases for years. Same things with veterans disability. Same thing with immigration. I could go on with this list for a long time. There are many parallel industries. And the reason that these industries exist is because the government said, hey, this is really hard. We have to outsource some support and outsource some advocacy of individuals to help us make sure that quality applications reach us. And so it's been a long history of collaboration. I think Advocate has just taken a step forward to say, well, I don't want to be too controversial, but like, why do these industries need to exist? In fact, if you have a turnstile or infrastructure that sits between the individual and does in an automatic manner the advocacy that many people are doing excellently in a small, regional, bespoke, individual manner. And so speaking about the government itself, all of these industries are currently collaborating with the government. We have accredited representatives. I'm one, and many of them work at Advocate, and they work with and on behalf of the federal government each and every day. And I'd say the vibes, if you will, mm-hmm. It's a challenge And I've not met a single person or talked to a single person in the government who has said to me, I just really, you know, people are using the system. We got to throw some sand in the gears. We got to slow it down. It's been like the exact opposite. And so when it comes to friction, yes, it has been hard. We are currently a small team, but it has not been hard for any of the reasons that would be more cynical. It has been hard because we're a tiny little company trying to, you know, poke a giant federal agency and say, hey, can we help out? Can we help out? We have a little different approach. Can we help out here? But I called it a blessing and I mean it. It's been nothing but kindness, collaboration, and even going above and beyond the typical collaboration that's expected in these industries. The reason they exist is because the government needed collaboration with private sector. And we're just taking a different approach to that private, fulfilling that private sector work.
And so where are you guys right now in terms of the building process of your company?
I can talk about the technology platform. So we made a lot of infrastructure investments from a technological perspective over the first year and recruited kind of our founding team, I would say. And our portion, I don't want to oversell it, like 40 to 50% of the way through automating the Social Security application that I mentioned. And by December, we will have launched our second vertical. So remember, I was kind of talking about government agencies as client segments. We will be on to our second client segment by December of this year. And we expect to have, within a certain band of complexity, the first automated application available. In our first use case, as I mentioned, is the Social Security Disability Insurance product. And when it comes to our team, we are 16 now, we'll be 50 by the end of the year. And the important thing is we will be helping thousands of claimants. We have already 2,000 on our books. We'll have many, many more at the end of this year. The reason why I know that to be true is, you know, it can be satisfying to do something quick or automated. You know, this isn't like an operational efficiency play. This is a time to money and pocket play. And it's like super critical for all of the clients that we serve. And so when I think about how I'm going to build this business across each and every vertical, I have a big research list. And it says days from when an individual American files for a benefit and days that they wait till they get their decision. And I know in my Excel document, I have it sorted by longest wait time first. And that's why we found ourselves in Social Security first. And so when I think about the build, I will not be counting in the way that I described it to you today. Oh, 50% automated, you know, 100% automated. There will always be humans in our business. This is a really important in human product. The most important thing is that we demolish the wait time to almost nothing. And so where we are in that build is like very early. But I have no doubt that with our team and the collaboration that we are lucky to be a part of, that we are headed in the right direction towards like diminishing the wait time very significantly, which I expect to explode our growth.
And maybe diving just one step further into the product, just for my own knowledge, how are you guys working to automate this? I know you are using AI, but kind of like what exactly does the underbelly of the product look like?
Well, now, some of it is secret, but essentially what we are doing is there are a number of steps in government adjudication for eligibility. And so we are parceling out each and every one of those steps, determining the requisite data for that step, and auto-arguing the case in basically using like kind of infinite strategies, coming up with the right strategy, and then submitting that information. And so what you can imagine, if you were to take a step back and think about a government agency and all the seats, some of those jobs are data collection. Other jobs are, I'll use our first use case, in the case of Social Security, figure out somebody's work history and what they did. Is this a diagnosis or isn't it a diagnosis? Can the person really work? Like in the case of my dad, can he do some job? Each and every one of those seats, if you think about them as an individual worker desk inside a government agency, we are breaking up each responsibility set and automating it individually. And then we basically are creating a chain. And that's why I described it as like a percent automated. It's basically how many of those roles can we capture the work of effectively with a certain degree of certainty and accuracy? Because again, this is not a game where we like hope to be kind of right. Like we require that we are extremely correct because this is people's entire livelihoods.
And another big factor at play here is security. Of course, when you're working with the kind of information that people would need to submit to get these benefits, it's obviously very personal information that, of course, could be detrimental if it ends up in the wrong place. How do you guys think about building security into this, especially building this interface that is a little detached from the actual end product, just because you guys are not part of the federal government?
Well, we operate under all of the accreditation, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliance laws that regulate the accredited representative industry already.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a boring answer, but that's how the industries are required to function now. That's one of the kind of basic requirements for holding an accreditation. So specifically, we, of course, are building those protections into our platform, but we were already required to comply with them previously because, again, it's not like any of these industries are new. They're not new. We are just systemizing the arguments that exist within them in a regional, bespoke, and individual manner. We are creating a system that does that.
And one more question on the AI piece, because I know you mentioned earlier that this, of course, will always be a human-to-human business. Like, there's no way to really fully automate the process. You always are going to have people involved no matter what. And so why does AI make sense as the solution here? Did you guys consider like other options as well? Or did AI always make the most sense for a certain reason? Or like, I'm just curious, like, why this ended up being the strategy that you guys went with if it wasn't the first?
It's just the shovel that we're holding today. AI is the pick or the shovel that we're holding to dig. It's kind of like saying you have a factory floor, why have you chosen electricity to illuminate it? It is just simply the most, it's most self-generative and advancing technology that is appropriate for giant pools of rules and giant pools of disaggregated data. And we are bringing them together with the logic layer that I mentioned. But had I built this business 5 years ago, you know, I'm a social scientist, I guess a bit of a data scientist, I would have, you know, come up with some basic stuff, some, you know, natural language processing, some logistic regressions, you know, oh boy, do I think this case wins or not? I think today, I always kind of giggle when I go down the highway and I see like AI powered HR software, AI powered, whatever. It makes me think of like whenever electricity was invented, it's like electricity powered, I don't know what, it's like automobiles. It's like, yeah, no kidding. It's simply, what did I call it? It's our shovel. The one thing I'll say, not to diminish its importance to us, the one thing I'll say is think about what we're doing. The government is beautifully sophisticated at thousands of pages of rules and regulations and requirement and job responsibilities. How wonderful if you could create a system of all of that, because they are massive amounts of language. And so this shovel, if you will, of AI is particularly suited to the quantizing the massive amount of qualitative data that it just so happens that the government was kind of beautiful at writing down for us and making public.
For sure.
More from this conversation right after a quick break.
And I want to pivot just a little bit because I'm really interested to know how fundraising for this product was. Did investors get it? Did they not get it? Were they all over it because it's AI?
We closed the seed round last year, this time last year. And that was probably the most challenging, where I had the most work to do, where I had, you know, my vision, team's credentials, and a bit of traction. We just closed a preempted Series A. We didn't need to go to market on the Series A. And I believe that the vision is vast. You know, we're talking about working with the entire federal government. You know, obviously there's not an individual benefit in every government agency, but there's a lot of them. So that is a really vast vision. And so where I found the big allies that are friends and now our partners are at very large funds who look at a mission like that one and say, man, that's a moonshot. Let's do it. Where it has been more challenging is I'm a diverse founder. I am the mom of three very young kids. I'm LGBT. I'm a woman founder. Lots of like every little sticker of that could be diverse founder is on my founder card. And I'd say that I've had a pretty mixed and negative experience with really small impact funds that I would have thought would have been more excited by who I was. And so that's been an interesting thing to note. Whereas the super traditional kind of monster funds out there have been like, all right, sign me up. Let's go to the moon, Emily.
That's actually that's so interesting. Oh my goodness, twins. That's so interesting. No, I mean, like, can you go more into that? Like, what were they saying? What was happening? Because that is kind of weird.
I'm a little bit afraid too, but I will.
I know. I get it.
Advocate is solving a federal problem for tens of millions of Americans today. We are one company facing off to one federal government. There is analogous individuals and federal governments all across the world. This is not a $1 billion IPO. This is $5 to $10 billion IPO if we go fast. That vision has a very high chance of complete failure. And when I was fundraising, the only thing that I had to say it wouldn't fail was my personal resolve. And certainly we had notes of traction. We have revenue. We have clients. I have a wonderful team. But mostly it was me standing in front of people and saying, because I told you so, because I'm going to. And I'll say, I don't know what it was, but with the really small LGBT funds, there are a few of those women-founded company funds, I just found without fail, they offered me incredibly low valuations that I would never take. Or they said, oof, boy, boy, is that a big vision. I would really need to see a lot more proof in market for several years before I can really get behind that one. So I don't have a diagnosis for why that occurred. It might be me, it might be the way that I communicate, but I endeavored to have every single one of those conversations with the confidence, poise, and rigor of an average straight white man. And so when having those conversations, I found that I was able to reach through not to those whose mission it was to support founders like me. And so I don't have a diagnosis, but I do know that that was my experience.
That is so interesting to think about, especially because if you're raising a seed round, most seed stage companies don't have a ton of proof points and things they can lay out already, especially raising at that stage. But I do want to touch on this a little bit because you mentioned it a bit at the top of the call as why Advocate is a company that would go out and raise venture funding as opposed to, like you said, more of a nonprofit or sort of a different kind of structure. And we had someone on the show a couple of months ago who was doing something similar with legal advice. And he said the same thing where he was like very adamant that this should be a company. This should not be a nonprofit. This should not be sort of like pro bono work among different lawyers. And I'm curious to ask you the same question. Why did it make sense for Advocate to be a venture-backed startup as opposed to some of those other routes that you could have taken for something in this area?
Basically, there's a huge piece of technological infrastructure missing from our country, and it is critical, and it hurts individuals, and it deserves the very best minds and the largest pools of capital directed at it. It is a similar question to saying, why does a Lamar home building exist? Why do the companies that build every single bridge and every single road and all the waterworks in our country, there are private sector companies that do that because the problem is massive. And efficiency and speed are required because we are connecting individuals to the support that our social contract meant to set up. So in summary, I'd say criticality, scale, and speed. It's perfectly fine to have a services business or a nonprofit in these industries, and people do that, and they absolutely help individuals, without a doubt. There is not an easy way to build a giant technology platform and drive it to national level adoption in 2 or 3 years without huge infusions of capital.
Right.
And so it's like the content of what we're doing is social impact, but man, I couldn't be more like, if there was a way for me to accelerate our approach, you know, we closed the Series A week ago. It was preempted. If I can get some proof points, I'm going to raise the B immediately. Like, I cannot bring accelerant to this issue. As you know, it's like with all the strength in my being, I would choose to move this forward as quickly and with as massive scale as was responsible. Because remember, who we're facing off to are like individuals like my father who are like certainly hurting. It drives my urgency and it also drives in some ways my caution. I appreciate your question on the compliance and things like that. Those are table stakes. But with communications, with our human in the loop, with our team of experts that will always work with people regardless of what vertical or category, that is the counterbalance to the other things that I'm saying.
Definitely. Definitely. And staying on the startup piece for just a second, because I know this had been an issue, especially with what happened with your father that had been ongoing, that you had been looking into for a while before realizing the real scale of the problem and eventually launching Advocate. What was it like actually deciding to take the leap to launch the company? And why was the timing right? How did that decision all kind of play out?
Oh, the timing was so bad. My dad got sick again 2 years ago, and I was like, oh yeah, that problem, that was horrible. What's going on with government benefits? And I looked into it again. So it was, you know, 12 years ago, and then you're like, what'd you do for 10 years? Well, I worked in a variety of formal large company capacities, but 2 years ago, he did get sick again. And I was aware of services businesses in these industries, and I can't describe to you how bad the timing was. I just felt I wish I could give you a systematic, like thoughtful answer, but genuinely, I was like, this is so crazy that this is missing. How has no one realized this before? I just have to do it. So I think I had a 1 week old or something. I was working at Bridgewater Associates and I left to started a services business that did this to figure out what was up basically with these industries, to figure out if the prescription for them could be something like the tech infrastructure that we're building. And it was like immediately after that. I'd say the other thing is when I started fundraising for the seed, which was last fall into the end of the year of 22, my dad had just died. And so, you know, it felt very personal. I felt like, I apologize if this is like not a scientific answer, but I felt like I was being carried to do it. Like there's just like no outcome except for me just doing it because this is missing and the incentives were there to build it. And so why not just do it? But that being said, if you ask my wife, she would say that I am totally inappropriate on my timing. And, you know, I have 3 little kids in like private preschool, things like that. And I think if there's ever an idea, if I can like share something, if there's ever an idea that feels inescapable, for me, it just like came to me and I was like, and now I do this no matter what. I wish I could say that it was more upper brain, upper floor brain, but it was more downstairs, instinctual.
You mentioned you had another company before this, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many companies have you started?
Just 2. I did a turnaround of 1 a few years ago in the insurance space. I just love insurance. That other one is a services business that operates in the space. That was a bit getting my feet wet into like becoming accredited, understanding what was going on. You know, a lot of the questions you've asked me have said, you know, well, wait, like, could this be a nonprofit? Could it be, you know, a network of social workers, a network of parole officers? That would be incredible if I could hand to them an infrastructure that made it possible. But for me, the last company was basically on the job training to understand what was required here.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, what have you learned in your entrepreneurial journey as you, I guess, keep founding companies and what advice you've brought from your first company compared to now, I guess?
What I have not learned is balance. My lead investor at Layer Hippo from the seed round was, I was like talking to her one day and she was wearing this bracelet that said like balance, like all beads on it. And she was like, you know, my career coach said that I should give this to somebody who needs it more than me. And she like handed the bracelet to me over the table.
Oh my God.
So I was like, oh man, I got to calm down. So that is, I'm not good at balance. Let me just put that transparently. I'm not. I'm sure that's coming through in this conversation. What I have learned though is just like any job anywhere, if you're working for a large company or a nonprofit or as a teacher or anything, if you show up every day, remain completely resolute in the goal, you will just simply kind of recursively move towards that goal with new solutions as long as you remember that the goal is immovable and the training that you have had, like whether it be in college or in high school or as a teacher or as a nurse, is all that you need inside of you to appropriately, professionally, calmly, clearly walk a new path towards the same goal each and every day, no matter what nonsense or difficulty comes your way. I'd say that has been really instructive because each and every day, negative feedback and disappointments rain upon your head. And you just have to think through to someone who helped you out with your learning earlier and wonder who you would like to be in their eyes and just try again.
And I also wanted to ask you a little bit about hiring for this company. I know you mentioned you guys have a small team already, but sounds like there are definitely plans to hire this year. Because this company sits at such an interesting intersection, maybe you'd want to hire people who know about government policy or have experience there, or hire people who are on that AI side or that data science side. How do you guys think about hiring for this exact, like, specific type of company?
We definitely do have an engineering team, and we'll continue to grow our engineering team. And in addition to that, many of the good people that I mentioned, both in the government and in private industries that are serving individuals just without a system, are ones that we will bring in and are bringing in to the advocate fold in order to operate on top of our system and maintain the individual to our human advocate connection. You basically gave the answer for me. It is those 2 groups of people. I would say, though, the thing that has been exciting and easier from now if I think about myself a year ago, it's so helpful to do things like this and have a conversation with you guys and like communicate out our mission and vision, because the good people, I think, are inspired by building something like this. I think there are a lot of builders out there and they are just kind of coming to us. And so that has felt really uplifting and like a really nice turn that the company has taken and I personally have experienced over the last year change pretty significantly.
That leads into something else I wanted to touch on. I know companies like this that have this big, great mission, of course, it's a little more of a heavier area to tackle than, say, as you mentioned earlier, maybe making optimization a little bit quicker or something kind of like in a realm where it's like you're making a business tool faster or making an email process quicker. This is a huge issue, as you mentioned, for so many people. And does that ever weigh on you, or sort of how do you navigate that personally?
Yeah.
Having this huge goal, this huge mission, but it does really affect a lot of people in a way that a lot of companies just aren't going to.
Because I have so many young children and demands in my life, I think it's basically super clarifying for me to have such like a significant purpose. I don't know that I could care about automating email for a company. Sorry for the email automation companies out there. But, you know, I was glancing over my shoulder and I have a mirror behind me that I use as a whiteboard and I have 38 people written on it. And those are the number of advocate clients who died last month waiting for their day in court to prove that they were too sick to do their full-time job. So it does get more clear than that for me. And I'd say it is probably the reason why that really nice, kind investor handed me the bracelet that said balance and probably why I need to be told to cool my heels more. But to me, it's kind of exhilarating and feels self-actualized and incredible that people would care enough about what we're doing to help advance this mission on behalf of those 38 people, of people like my stepfather, David, of really all of us as we touch more and more verticals. Again, it's one of those things in the past year that's been absolutely the best job I've ever had, probably will be the best job I've ever had. And it's something that I didn't exactly expect, that kind of drive to come from something, as you called it, so heavy and difficult. It's like, really, what else matters? How about you like keep people alive and you make it so that they can buy groceries faster? Probably start there.
And unfortunately, that puts us right at time. So we are going to have to wrap there. But thank you again, Emily, for coming on the show.
Thank you guys so much.
That was our conversation with Emily. Dom, what was the lie?
The lie was that the government was actually excited, I guess, to work with new companies and third-party infrastructure about stuff like this, which I actually find surprising.
I find it surprising on the one hand because kind of what I asked her about, like the security concerns, of course, that come with this, especially with like plugging in a third party that's going to take stuff like your social security number, which you don't have to worry about when you apply to government stuff because like they already have that information. But on the other hand, the government was probably like, oh, you want to build this for us? Great. Like, we don't want to do it. So like, I am surprised, but I definitely could see maybe why they'd lean in.
Yeah. And it's also really, really early because working with government is just hard in terms of how slow it is and how ridiculous it is. So I imagine that right now everyone's excited, but as the product develops and as just working with bureaucracy kicks in, I imagine that things might get a little bit more challenging.
For sure. And I think this could be one of those things too, where obviously a very different company and a very different business model, but I spoke to a startup recently that is taking care of lost and found. And originally I was like, well, why would stadiums and arenas care if the people who went here like retrieved their items? Like, I was like, why do they really care that much if you leave your water bottle that you're going to come and find it? And the guy was like, I don't think you understand when people leave something important, how much they call and email and call and email and drive these people who are not focused on lost and found per se, like that becomes their whole job. And I'm wondering if that's maybe why some of this openness from the government comes from, because if they aren't fixing the system themselves, I'm sure they've got people who just spend all day on the phone with people being like, where are my benefits? Or like, why can't I get this to work? And like, maybe they do want to cut some of those inefficiencies, but the government's not very good at trimming the fat. So they're probably just happy someone else is willing to try it for them.
Wait, side note, when I was a kid, I went to Coney Island and saw that there was a lost and found section for children, and it scarred me to this day. But I know, I was just thinking about, like, there were, like, kids just in this area, and I was like, what is this? And it's, like, lost and found for kids. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
What is this? But yeah, I can see, yeah, the government would rather just have someone else do it because Lord knows they're not going to do it, can't get it done. And it's a good startup idea.
Especially too, because it is money that is set aside. I've always wondered actually what happens because this is not, and like I brought this up a bit too on the call, like the Small Business Bureau is the same boat in this way where it's like they have all this money set aside for small business loans each year, but it doesn't get fully used because so many companies don't think they're fit or like startups are like, well, if I raise VC, I can't do that, which is like not 100% true. And so like some of it gets left over and I'm always curious what happens with the leftover government money. Does it just go to defense? Probably.
I was going to say it's not going to infrastructure.
That's for sure.
But the government is so confusing with everything. Like even thinking about it, I don't even know, not that our generation will get Social Security benefits, but I was like, I don't even know how you apply for benefits now in that process. It seems like everything is so confusing. So having a company that just makes it easier or applies like, I don't know, a millennial aesthetic to it would make this probably a lot easier for a lot of people because the government has a lot of stuff. And it seems like we've been talking to a lot of companies who've been working with the government and they're saying, yeah, the government wants to do better. They just don't know how or they can't right. at the moment.
No, and I think that's why this feels like a good use case for AI, even though it's like the one hand I brought up. The security concerns, of course, you get that with AI. If it's learning what you're putting in your docs, that means it's learning your address and your social security number. And it's like learning those things if you're using that kind of an application in that way. But at the same time, like Emily made the good point that there are actually rules and like they are written down. And that is real data that we know to be correct that the government put out that they can use to train the model to help people find these benefits and fill out the forms. So that part of it, I'm like, that makes total sense because that's the thing I keep hearing more and more from various AI startups is that if they're working in something like legal or something like this, where it's like there are set and defined rules to build off of, like that makes such a difference. It doesn't have to guess. Like if you ask it about something, it can actually go and pull the individual rule because they exist.
Yeah, a good use case for AI. I imagine no one likes being on the phone for like 6 hours arguing about benefits. So no. This is good use case for AI, definitely.
Yeah. And one of the other things I thought was interesting was her luck and lack of luck with the fundraising process, because that definitely surprised me. Well, on the one hand, it surprised me that she had luck with the big firms and not some of the more specialized firms. But on the other hand, the one thing that stood out to me is this government piece of it. American Dynism and like Andreessen, they're all over that. And like, I feel like firms are really into companies that work with the government in a way that they weren't even like 2 years ago, which still to me is like crazy. I remember covering a firm literally summer 2022 who was helping, their whole shtick was like, oh, we'll invest in companies that could have a government contract and we'll help them get it. And like, that was like, they struggled to like raise LP money because LPs were like, that's not a thing. Now it's like, that's all anyone talks about. It seems like it's AI and it's big government. So I feel big VCs are like, that's very in their moment right now.
Yeah, because like when I'm thinking of like an impact fund, I imagine they don't have as much splashy capital. But also this is like a really early business and it does work with the government, which is a nuance.
For sure.
And it especially needs a lot. I imagine it needs a lot on the firm side as well in terms of just knowledge and understanding of how to navigate working with technology that will be used by the government. And I imagine those are resources bigger firms would have. Who's on the American Dynamism team at A16Z? Like, I don't know. Like, I imagine there's just a lot more knowledge there. But I don't know what was going on with the social impact funds. But I imagine that it had something to do with the product being really, really early, maybe.
Yeah, which like I get because like she said, like this is a moonshot. Of course, even though the basic concept of this of like, oh, making it so people who are entitled to these benefits can get them easier, like saying it like that sounds easy, but government's hard. And like you said, yeah, she's still building the product. So it's like that just may be too big for a fund that just can't take that kind of risk on that vision, I guess would be how I would put it.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah. The one thing is that some of these more like focused smaller funds, they probably get pitched, like if they're like demographic specific, like she was saying, like funds that invest in women or funds that invest in members of the LGBTQ plus community, they're getting pitched by every founder who fits those categories too.
Yeah.
So it's like, I wouldn't be super surprised by the fact of it just being like, there's a lot of competition for those dollars too, even though, of course, they're deemed an overall venture like niche. But the reason they exist is because they know they're filling a gap. It just may be like these funds are not the right size to fill that gap, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's also probably it. I mean, I imagine as the company grows and launches and starts kicking off, she could probably go back to some of the impact funds.
For sure. Yeah, because it's like if you can show even that like this helped 100 people or like a small sample set of people just to show that it works. I mean, that makes such a big difference because like if you get this set up, the government's like, cool, you can use this. I mean, like that could happen pretty early in the journey and that would make a huge difference in like what the risk profile would look like for sure.
Yeah, but otherwise, I think it's cool that there's a lot of innovation happening in this space that's making the government stuff easier. I keep thinking of that founder we spoke to with that legal aid.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like paperwork, just like apps that help us get through government paperwork and all of the nuance and headaches that come with existing in this country. It gives me hope for our generation, but I don't know what the latest report is, but I don't think that we're getting Social Security.
Oh my God.
So yeah. Maybe another benefit.
Yeah, help us with something else, I guess.
Yeah.
Found is hosted by myself, TechCrunch senior reporter Becca Skutak, alongside senior reporter Dominic Midori-Davis. Found is produced by Maggie Stamets with editing by Kel. Our illustrator is Bryce Durbin. Found's audience development and social media is managed by Morgan Little, Alyssa Stringer, and Natalie Kreisman. TechCrunch's audio products are managed by Henry Pickovit. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.